Hello and welcome to A Little Bird Told Me, the podcast where two freelance writers tell you all the tricks of the trade. We talk about the highs, the lows, and the no-nos of successful self-employment, saving you from mighty embarrassment and mortifying mistakes, and guiding you to the very top of your chosen profession. Freelancing is amazing, but that doesn't mean it's easy. Tune into this podcast every week and go to alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com where you can subscribe to ensure that you never miss an episode. Whether iTunes, an RSS podcatcher or Stitcher Smart Radio are your platform of choice, we've made it really easy to sign up and be the first to hear our latest words of wisdom. There you will also find any links we mention, our own websites and our social media feeds, as well as the A Little Bird Told Me Facebook page too. I am Philippa Willits.
And I'm Laurie Hartshorn, and today we're going to be talking about one of the biggest events in the Fiction Writer's Annual Calendar, namely NaNoWriMo.
We are indeed. Now, NaNoWriMo is an event that takes place every year where thousands of people across the world undertake the frankly ridiculous but kind of fabulous task of writing a novel in a month. The goal is that during the month of November, you'll write 50,000 words of fiction.
And it sounds like it's not doable, but it is. And I think one thing that people keep in mind when they tackle it is that certain authors, although only very few, have landed book deals, haven't they?
As there is, yes, absolutely. Yeah, and a surprisingly high number of people do complete the task. So,
that's true. I think Water for Elephants was one of the ones that I know about.
Oh, yes, that rings a bell.
That was a NaNoWriMo novel.
Now, there are very few rules for NaNoWriMo, but the few there are important. You have to write a 50,000-word novel or 50,000 words of a novel from scratch in a single month. You sign up to the website at nanowrimo.org, and that's NaNoWriMo, which is for National Novel Writing Month. And there are tons of resources to get you started. You can start writing at midnight on November the 1st, and you have to have finished by 11:59 p.m. on November the 30th. Most people approach this by writing 1,667 words a day, but you can divide it up however you want to. You submit your word counts to the website, and those who've written 50,000 words by the end of the month have won the challenge.
Can you imagine if you wrote 1,667 words and then thought, oh, I'd better stop now?
But if you wrote 1,400 easily and then the rest were a struggle,
no, true.
You may well be counting down to that 67.
Another adverb in here somewhere.
Yes.
Now, the first thing that we're going to look at are just some ways that you can start to prepare yourself for NaNoWriMo. Now, NaNoWriMo takes place in November, so now is the perfect time to start preparing.
One of the ways that's useful to prepare is to start bumping up your creativity a bit. Start thinking of ways to get your mind exploring new ideas.
Definitely, this is not the time to go down with a huge case of writer's block.
No.
And I think it's one of the things that scares people most. They simply sit there thinking, but I just don't have it in me. Like, I'm not that inspired. I have to go and do a day job. I have work to do. I have kids to feed.
Mm.
So it's really, really good to be able to boost your inspiration. So my first suggestion is that you should make a list of creativity boosters, as I call them, that will help to get your head in the writing space. Now, these, you know, they don't have to be anything complicated. It could be anything from going for a 10-minute walk around the block, taking half an hour out of a writing afternoon to have a coffee and do some people watching in your local cafe, doing 5 minutes of meditation, spending 10 minutes on the elliptical, nosying through some beautiful images or some writing prompts online, free association writing, where you just write anything and everything that comes into your head. anything that will help you to generate ideas, images, no matter how silly or how useless they might seem, pop it all down on your list and keep that list pinned somewhere safe for the whole of November.
Yeah, there are people who always carry a notebook with them, and so wherever they are, they can note ideas down, whether that's an overheard conversation on the bus or something inspired by something you saw in a gallery or a shop. Keep the ideas coming. And like Laurie says, write it all down, because you never know what an idea will inspire down the road.
Mm-hmm, definitely, because you respond differently. You know, where people are sensual in the true sense of the word. I respond better to visual prompts than I do to written writing prompts. Like, I can't for the life of me write a story if somebody gives me three words and says a story about these words. But some people really thrive on those sorts of writing prompts. And likewise, you know, other people might find that photos really, really help them.
Mm.
And like you say, if you carry a notebook around with you, sights, sounds, smells, we don't think about these things. And I've been reading a lot on fiction writing at the moment. And apparently a lot of fiction writers fall down on making their scenes 3D because they don't think beyond what they can see.
Okay, yeah.
So it's all, you know, descriptions and words and images, whether mental or visual images.
Yeah.
And there's nothing about the way things sound, the way things smell.
Yeah.
Temperature, even what they can hear outside of people talking, outside of dialogue.
Mm. So
it's a really good idea, I think, to keep a notebook with you at this time.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, there's no harm in getting inspiration from life at all.
Absolutely. Another thing you might want to do to prepare, and this, some people say this is cheating and you shouldn't do this until November starts, but I think it's not too strict, and that's to actually start planning your novel.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't think it's cheating, and I think people get a bit grousey about things, don't they? But some people are naturally planners.
Yeah.
You know, some people are big planners, while some people prefer to get just stuck in and just can get stuck in.
Mm.
And it's important to know which one you are and to work that to your advantage.
Yeah.
Now, even if you are one of the planners, I'm not saying draft your entire novel, because that's the whole point of NaNoWriMo.
Sure.
But planning something is different to actually doing it. Now, if you're a planner, it doesn't mean that you'll follow one path. Your method will still vary. You might be a little bit like me. You might be a wordy planner, in which case you'll have like a Word document or an open office document full of notes, inspiring sayings, snippets of dialogue, descriptions, and goodness knows what else. And that will just become your best friend over the course of November. Or, like the lovely Pip, you might be a more visual person and you might respond better to non-linear planning.
Yeah, I'm currently obsessed with mind maps. They're running my life. I've always done them on paper, but I've been experimenting recently with some of the mind mapping websites and Android apps. They're a really good way to plan, especially if you're not a fan of plain linear structures and having, you know, just a list of things you want to happen. That may not inspire you at all.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I see a lot of fiction writers do is use Pinterest to not just get inspiration, but also to plan their writing. And so they'll have a pin board for inspiration, for instance, which might be, like Laurie was saying, that might be quotes, it might be pictures, it might be ideas, it could be anything really. But then they'll also have a pin board for each character and put in things that match those characters' traits.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, and a pin board for the place that the novel is set in, so that they can, I don't know, get visual or information about that. And also, you know, you can break it down into pins that seem relevant to chapter one, or pins that seem relevant to the big drama in the middle of your book. So if that kind of thing sounds like it would inspire you, give it a try.
That's a really, really excellent idea. I'd come across Pinterest as inspiration, but I'd never really thought about it as a planning tool.
Mm. It's the way people are using it in all different arenas, really, not just writing, is really quite it's quite amazing. I know my sister is a landscape architect, and she's always kind of been a bit on and off Pinterest, but recently She's using it for a lot of her work, for kind of idea gathering and planning. And also, I don't know whether she does this, but it could be a great way to then go back to your client and show them and say, these are the things that are inspiring me when I think about designing your fountain.
Definitely, you know, and I suppose when you take yourself to a client, it's very similar to taking yourself to a computer to write your novel. You've still got to express the ideas that are inside.
Yeah.
You've still got to excite and inspire somebody who's either listening to you or going to be reading you. Obviously, you know, when you have a client there face to face, it's more immediate. But you still, when you're a writer, you still have to write for other people. That's the point of a novel, is that it's going to be read.
Yeah, yeah. Now, another thing about planning in terms of inspiration and organisation is that when you sign up to the NaNoWriMo website, you can look for local events in your area. In some places, groups of writers get together to write together, which can be great, especially if your enthusiasm starts flagging partway through. In other areas, there'll be workshops or classes. So check out the resources and also look at the online support they offer. There are forums on the NaNoWriMo site, but also the Twitter NaNoWriMo hashtag usually becomes very busy too. Mm-hmm. So seeing other people's progress can help to inspire you.
Definitely. And I'd say, I feel like I'm going to put a dampener on it, and I'm certainly not, because I know that people get a lot of support and it really does help them through, particularly the final few days when they're flagging and they need somebody to kind of cheerlead them on. But if you're not that sort of person, that's also completely fine.
Absolutely.
So you feel intimidated by other people going, oh my God, I've written 50,000 words and it's only day two.
And there'll always be one, let's face it.
There's always one hashtag, isn't there? If you feel like you want to tuck yourself away, I mean, I've tried spending afternoons writing with a friend sometimes in a cafe, and sometimes it's wonderful, and sometimes it's dreadful. It's a very, very mixed bag for me, because sometimes I just need to be somewhere quiet and alone, because we'll end up chatting, and sometimes inspiration can really strike.
Yeah.
Also, remember that, you know, your average novel, and I suppose there is no average novel, but it's between 60,000 and 90,000 words, and that's no small thing. So a lot of the time, once you've got your inspiration, you are just going to have to sit down and really put that work in. Now, for NaNoWriMo, you have to get 50,000 words down on paper, so to speak, over the course of the month. So, looking at novel planning in itself, while your chapter length will vary, of course, you don't just have a set length for every chapter, it can be a good idea to start out, once you've got all your inspiring bits and bobs together, with a plan that consists of, say, 18 chapters of around 3,000 words each. And that will take you very safely to 54,000 words.
Yeah.
Now, if you divide that into 4 weeks, you're looking at 13,500 words every week, which to me, for some reason, is less intimidating than 1,667 words a day.
It's interesting, isn't it, how just reframing the same information can make it seem more intimidating or less intimidating or doable or less so, and that will vary for different people as well.
Definitely.
And like Laurie was saying about, you know, some people would thrive in a group and others not. That's, you know, we always give a lot of alternatives, including ones that we'll both say, I don't do this, but some people find it helpful.
Mm.
Because everybody does work differently, and just because, you know, one person completes the challenge every year by doing it on a trampoline after 8 cups of coffee or something really obscure doesn't mean it will work for everybody. I don't know where in my head that particular example came from, but I was, you know, everybody's got their own things that work for them. So ignore the bits that we suggest that you think that sounds awful, because not everything will apply to everybody.
No, of course. I mean, Pip enjoys working in cafes a lot more than I do. My husband works with the TV on. He can't work without background noise. It would drive me potty
to
have the TV on when I was working. I can't do it.
Yeah.
So whatever works.
Now, the other thing you need to plan, and it's a good idea ahead of November to get an idea of how this is likely to work for you, is your time.
Yes, very, very much so, because you can make all the plans in the world about, I'm going to do this with my novel, I'm going to be do that with my novel, but as I've just said, you actually need to sit down and write it.
Yeah.
So my advice would be to set yourself a regular time for writing. And even though we've just said that there aren't really things that work for everybody, this seems to be one of the things that works for most people.
Mm.
And most writers that I read, you know, interviews and things like that, most websites for fiction writing, they really all do recommend that you set yourself a regular time.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of just an association thing in your brain. Your brain goes, oh, right, yeah, this is writing time, and it learns that this is a time to be creative and do some fiction.
Yeah.
So whether you're the kind of person who prefers to write for 30 minutes every morning or 6 hours every Sunday, it is good to block off some regular times that are specifically for your novel over the course of November.
Yeah.
Now, at first, as we say, you're training your brain, so you might find yourself sitting there just going, it's 6:30 in the morning, I've got half an hour, and I have nothing in me, I just want to be in bed. You know, and you might just want to go and get a brew, you might just not want to be there at all. You just might not feel able to get started because you're just not used to that time being creative writing time.
Mm.
But I think it's important just to allow yourself to be creative in that period and not get sidetracked with work. I think that's a really important thing. Even if you can't write,
yeah,
I think leave that space as a creative time rather than going, oh, do you know what? It's going to be Monday tomorrow. I'm going to catch up on some work.
There's a famous book whose name I embarrassingly can't remember, but that I will add to the show notes if it doesn't occur to either of us by the end of the show. It's a book about creativity, and she advocates the first thing you do in the morning is you should write, I can't remember if it's a certain number of pages or for a certain amount of time, but she says start the day doing this every day, and if necessary, just write 4 pages of I've no idea what to write, I hate this exercise, I don't know what to write, but do it regardless. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll come up with gems and sometimes it will be awful, but train. This is the kind of exercise, NaNoWriMo is the kind of exercise that you need to train your brain to just get going in many ways. The great and terrifying thing about NaNoWriMo is that it's all about silencing your inner censor and just writing.
Mm-hmm.
They're strong advocates of having 50,000 words of bad grammar and inconsistent stories as long as you just let your fingers write. It can be a really excellent exercise in beating writer's block if you just have to keep writing to get to the end of today's 1667 words.
Definitely, because I think often the harshest critic can be yourself. And that's not to say that, you know, you'll write something and it'll be perfect prose and it'll all be marvellous. I mean, I remember reading that Enid Blyton, our childhood classic, used to write a novel in an afternoon. Now,
did she? I probably read most of them.
No, I'd got a dustbin bag full, but
yeah.
I took them all to a charity shop and I couldn't lift the bag. But I'm not sure how much I believe it, and I'm not sure how much of that would have been drafting it.
Yeah.
But, you know, regardless of that, it would make you a very unusual writer if you could write something in such a short space of time and it be perfect.
Yeah.
So nobody's saying it's going to be perfect, but it's a good idea to just go, do you know what? It's okay. It's okay that that's spelt wrong. It's okay that the grammar in there is dodgy. Because I think it's an exercise, as you say, it's an exercise in self-love and, you know, self-acceptance as much as anything else. Because life can be really hard, particularly if you're a copywriter as well as a fiction writer.
Yeah.
You know, obviously things have to be perfect when you're a copywriter, and it can really seize you up when you're fiction writing. It can be very, very easy to slip into a writer's block moment. And I think if you do feel yourself seizing up and just panicking because you're just struggling to get started or you're struggling to get back into it, it's easier said than done, but try to relax. And if you can't really relax in your writing zone, say at your kitchen table or at your desk, it's time to go back to that list of creativity boosters.
Mm.
Don't let yourself off the hook entirely. Like I say, don't go and just do some work. It's important to do do something creative with that time and get something down on paper. So what I would suggest is choose a creativity booster that fits with your allocated writing slot. So if you're doing half an hour, choose a shorter one. And if you're doing 6 hours, choose a couple of short ones or one longer one if you need it.
That makes complete sense. If you've got 6 hours, then go for a 2-hour country walk.
Yeah.
That will probably give you far more ideas than sitting down with a piece of paper going, come on.
Yeah.
Think of this story.
Particularly if you copyright at that desk as well. So now we've looked a bit at how to prepare for NaNoWriMo. It's that big moment where you have to get started. And what we're going to do is look at how you should get yourself through, or how you could get yourself through weeks 1, 2, 3, and 4.
So week one. Week one, you're going to have to adjust to a new kind of writing, basically. Mm-hmm. Because one of the biggest things about NaNoWriMo is that its very nature, which is the volume you need to write, the speed at which you need to write, means that you have to get rid of your inner critic, as we said earlier. That sensor in your brain that tells you you're writing badly or that last sentence isn't up to scratch. NaNoWriMo is about speed and getting something down. Your only goal is 50,000 words. Mm-hmm. If you win, that is, if you produce 50,000 words, it will be quite bad. And that's kind of the point, because NaNoWriMo teaches you to allow yourself to be messy. Because actually, if at the end of the month you have 50,000 words with a half-decent plot and some good characters, that's when the work starts.
Definitely, definitely agree.
But because of this, the first week will be quite difficult for a lot of writers. You want to perfect what you're doing, and you have to train yourself to just get your ideas down. Making your NaNoWriMo novel into an actual novel starts in December, when you start to edit and rewrite, so forget about that. Just write. The site explains it as follows. In response to the question, if I'm just mindlessly writing 50,000 words, why bother? Why not just write a real novel later when I've got more time? And they give three quite convincing reasons, I think. Number one, if you don't do it now, you probably never will. Novel writing is mostly a one-day event, as in, one day I'd like to write a novel. Here's the truth, 99% of us, if left to our own devices, would never make the time to write a novel. It's just so far outside our normal lives that it constantly slips down to the bottom of our to-do lists. Now, we can all recognise that. It's true. So, the structure of NaNoWriMo forces you to put away all those self-defeating worries and start. Once you've got the first 5 chapters under your belt, the rest will come easily, or painfully, but it will come, and you'll have friends to help you see it through to 50k. The second reason, aiming low is the best way to succeed. With entry-level novel writing, shooting for the moon is the surest way to get nowhere. With high expectations, everything you write will sound cheesy and awkward.
That is true.
Yeah. Once you start evaluating your story in terms of word count, you take that pressure off yourself, and you'll start surprising yourself with a great bit of dialogue here and an ingenious plot twist there. Characters will start doing things you never expected, taking the story places you'd never imagined. There will be much execrable prose, yes, but amidst it there will be beauty, a lot of it.
Optimistic, but I think true.
Yes, indeed. And there reason number three. Art for art's sake does wonderful things to you. It makes you laugh, it makes you cry, it makes you want to take naps and go places wearing funny pants. Doing something just for the hell of it is a wonderful antidote to all the chores and must-dos of daily life. Writing a novel in a month is both exhilarating and stupid, and we would all do well to invite a little more spontaneous stupidity into our lives.
I think that's true. I really do. Yeah.
So that's the three main reasons for saying, even if you write crap, just write. And I think that's pretty persuasive, actually.
No, I definitely do. You know, I think there are a lot of people who are going to go, oh, I've written a novel and leave it at that. But yeah, that's not really your concern. This is the thing. It would be one of my pet hates.
Yeah.
People going, ah, oh, I've written 5 novels. Or, you know, you get a lot of people going, I've written a series of novels, and you see them for sale for, like, £5 on Amazon. You look at them and they've not been edited or proofed. Yeah. Of course it's my pet hate. I'm an editor.
Yeah.
But for the sake of NaNoWriMo, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what anyone else is doing. It doesn't matter what you're doing. all you have to do is get 50,000 words down.
Yeah, and if you think about it, can you imagine meeting up with some friends for a Christmas party and they say, oh, what have you been up to? Can you imagine the amazement of being able to say, oh, I wrote a novel?
It's amazing, isn't it? Because it's a fun thing. You know, you've got all these cheesy phrases like, oh, everyone's got a novel inside them. Because that's one of Pip's favourites.
I haven't.
Every time I mention it, she can't help herself. She goes, I bloody haven't. There's no novel in here. I've checked. I haven't got a novel. So, yeah, if you don't have a novel, just bear with us this week. I promise we won't tell you you've got a novel inside you. You might not have. So if you don't, just make sure you go and subscribe and tune into future episodes, because this is just, you know, NaNoWriMo is coming up, and we just thought we'd give it a little bit of a nod. But it's okay if you don't have a novel in you like Pip.
It is. And even if you do, like they say, most people say one day, my ambition is to write a novel and then never do anything about it. And this is a chance to do it.
Yep, stop, get it off your bucket list and get it done. So, week two, you're bound to be feeling the strain a little bit now. Maybe your writerly muscles are aching a bit and you're thinking, gosh, not even halfway through yet. So, week two is all about staying inspired.
Yeah, by this week you might be flagging. You're probably starting to think that this is a dreadful idea. The initial excitement of the start of the month has passed and all your family's in bed and you're still typing and counting every word until you can get to that magical 1667 and you hate your novel and your characters are getting on your nerves and you've no idea what you're doing. Yeah, so this is a good time to start seeking inspiration and support. The ideas we mentioned earlier are great. And also checking in with the NaNoWriMo forums, you'll be amazed at how many other people are struggling. You know, it may be that you look at the Twitter hashtag and it's all people saying, I've written my words for today. Whereas if you go onto the forums, you're more likely to get people saying, I'm stuck, I've hit a wall, I don't know what to do. And so you can get some mutual support there to give you the impetus to keep at it.
Definitely. And I think an interesting point to make at this juncture is that although when you read a novel, you read it from start to finish, you read it from cover to cover, you don't necessarily have to write it that way.
That's true.
So if you're feeling really weepy and you're feeling really sad and sorry for yourself, and you've just written, say you're up to chapter three, and you've just got to the end of chapter three, and now a big funny scene's about to come up, you don't have to tackle that now. You can take yourself off to another part of the novel, and you can write a different bit that matches your mood.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Yeah, you don't have to write something in order. You know, you don't have to write chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. Mm. Write whatever you feel. If you're feeling inspired in a sad way, write one of the sad scenes. If you're feeling funny and you're supposed to be writing a sad scene, put the sad scene on one side and write one of the funny scenes. Or, if there aren't any funny scenes, write one of the creative scenes with the dialogue and the action. You know, something to match your mood, rather than trying to force yourself to get inspired in a particular way.
And that's where your novel planning will come in really handy.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you've got something you can look at, if you think, I can't write this death scene, I just can't face it, then you can look at your plan and pick another section.
Of course you can, yeah.
Without having to think, okay, in order for me to write a different bit, I have to work out where the book's going and what's going to happen. Then you'll get stuck. Whereas if you have a written plan, a drawn plan,
mm-hmm.
a Pinterest account, whatever it is, go back and refer to those and choose another section that way.
Definitely. And if you're not a planner, that's still very good advice. Because you've touched on something you might think, oh, well, you know, I can't write that because I don't know where my novel's going. You actually could. You could actually say, do you know what? I don't know where my novel's going, but I woke up this morning, I was really inspired with this random idea, and, you know, you can be one of those novelists who says, do you know what, I don't decide where the book goes, my characters do.
Mm.
So if you just think of something random, you know, if you thought your story was going to be tragic, but then this really funny, amazing plot twist comes to you, that's okay.
Yeah.
it's not a one-way process. If you write that during NaNoWriMo and you find that your novel actually turns out quite funny,
yeah,
you can either have a generally sad book with some humour in it, or you just have a hilarious book. And if you decide at the end of the month that you wanted to write something sad after all, you can still do that. It's not a once-only shot. So if you are just inspired to go ahead and just go off on a tangent, by all means, carry on.
And if you think, well, I don't know where, I'd quite like to write about those two characters getting together, mm-hmm. but then you think, well, I don't know where the book's going, maybe that's where the book's going.
Yeah. No, definitely. You know, if something's in your head, it's probably there for a reason. And I think there's this urge to produce great art. And, you know, we do look down on quite simple, funny, charming, witty writing sometimes. You know, everything is supposed to be literary and highbrow, and it's okay if that isn't what you want to write.
Yeah. So
whatever inspires you, embrace it in week two.
There's a thing with, I read the odd murder mystery type book, and it's not what I consider great literature, but it's compelling and it's easy to read and it mm-hmm. keeps my attention.
Yeah.
And yet a lot of people think very badly of that kind of fiction.
Yeah.
And yet the really good writers, the really good ones, are doing very well out of it, thank you very much, have massive fan base. And it may not be considered as worthy as some other types of writing, but it doesn't matter.
No, of course it doesn't. Genre fiction has its place, just like literary fiction does.
Absolutely.
You know, sometimes I don't want to read a heavy-going novel. You know, there's a reason that I reread my favourite novels.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't... I'm not particularly a fan of genre fiction, but just like you've said about crime novels, I have certain novels that I know exactly what's going to happen because I've read them 20 times.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just want to read something that will catch my attention and keep it and just transport me somewhere else for a little bit.
Yeah, I read a book once called Relentless, and it was like this guy being pursued, and it was long and it went on and on.
So it was relentless then.
And it was relentless. It was just, this guy was just, whenever you thought he escaped, the person that saved him turned out to be after him, and so then he had to run from them. And I got to the end of it, and I'm not one of these people who feels an obligation to finish a book. Uh-huh. You know, if I'm not enjoying it, I'll leave it. But I did get to the end because it kept you reading, mm-hmm. because you kind of, you know, you wanted to see whether he'd escaped from, like, baddie number 874.
And did he?
Yeah, and someone said to me at the end, you know, how was it? And I was just like, well, it was relentless. And
I'm just exhausted.
Yeah, and so it was perfectly titled, a bit like Snakes on a Plane. It did what, you know, what it told you it was going to do. And it wasn't great literature, and I wouldn't even recommend it. But it kept me reading, and that's more than some of the classics do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't always want to wade through something.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so don't feel you have to be Jane Austen or Charles Dickens or anybody. Be you and see what comes out.
This is it. Whatever inspires you, just go with it.
And so when you've got through week two and you've beaten the crash when you think you can't do it anymore, you'll find yourself in week three, at which point you're halfway through.
Yay, congratulations.
Now, this is a good week to catch up if you've fallen behind. You may have let the odd day go, so it's a good week to get back on top of your plan. And also want to not give in and give up again. If you haven't been keeping to your word count plan, recalculate at this stage. Mm-hmm. Work out how many days you've got left in November and how many words you've got left to write. Divide the words by the days, and that's how many words you have to write every day. Work out your new daily goal and meet it. Beat it even, get ahead. A lot of NaNoWriMo participants will not go to bed until their word count is reached. And at this point, the end's in sight.
Definitely. And it could be tempting. You can think, oh, you know, it's just the start of week three. I've got week three and all of week four to go. But if you push yourself and you make yourself catch up at this point, you know, it's really only a four-week thing. So unless you leave catching up until next week in week four, you're going to be catching up at the last minute. So it's one of those times to be really strict with yourself and say, no, this is the time that I'm going to catch up, because this is the peak of the month.
Mm.
It's a downward slope from here on.
Yeah.
You need to be snowballing. You need to get more and more and more done. So don't rest on your laurels thinking, oh, I've got half a month to go. Really use time, because the pressure is going to mount in week four.
Yeah. And at this stage, you might also start thinking that you've run out of story ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time to unstick yourself, renew your inspiration and take action to boost your creativity. Imagine your characters in an unusual situation and see how they react. Imagine them meeting other characters from other famous literature. See what they talk about. Imagine that your novels are soap opera. What's the next big cliffhanger to end this episode?
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual at this stage for people doing NaNoWriMo to get so desperate for ideas that an alien spaceship invades their period drama, or they kill off all their main characters in a zombie attack, or they turn their quirky imaginings of life with Mozart into a massive murder mystery. People get desperate, they've no idea what to do. And if that's what you need to do to keep going, then do it. Remember, this is an exercise in consistency and productivity. You can iron out the kinks, no matter how massive they are, next month.
I'm not entirely sure that I'd call a spaceship landing in the middle of Pride and Prejudice a kink, but... but yeah, no, I mean, if that's what it takes to keep you writing, then just do it, because I'm thinking about the general structure of a novel at this point and trying to imagine overlaying that on the time that you have in November for NaNoWriMo.
Mm.
At this point, you're going to be approaching what will probably be your main plot arc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the high point in your novel.
Yeah.
Generally, there'll be increasing action, more and more tension, more and more tension. And at this point, somewhere in week three, week four, sort of middle of week four, beginning of week four, you should really be approaching the peak of the action in your novel. So you need a big bang at this point.
Yeah.
And then throughout week four, you tie up your loose ends, you know, you finish off. If there are a few little subplots that need tying up, then that's when you do that. But this is the week for your big action. So as Pip says, it's really important to keep inspired and to just try and get your big, big scene in there.
Yeah, I remember I was following the hashtag last year, and it was this time where I saw so many people do a bit of a run-up of, oh, I don't know what to do now, and then just eventually in a kind of defeated way go, oh, I've killed him. And it's just, like, I didn't know what else to do. There were lots of deaths at this time in the month. So, you know, try not to do it to your main character, but if necessary, kill someone else off.
Well, this is true. I mean, I was thinking about the Hunger Games, actually, and I don't want to create any spoilers in case anybody's listening and they haven't read it. But Suzanne Collins isn't afraid to kill off her characters.
Mm.
She's really not. And it's quite exciting. I mean, it's devastating. When you
become
attached to a character, but I mean, the recent controversy with Helen Fielding killing off Mark Darcy.
Oh, goodness me.
Latest, I don't know what possessed her. I mean, I don't particularly care. I don't like the novels. But a lot of people are completely devastated, so choose carefully. It can be very exciting to kill off a character, but don't kill off somebody who's going to kill off all the interest.
I think readers often get a bit complacent because you might think, oh, are they in danger? I know sometimes, like, with a main character, if there's a big danger plot, you think, I'll literally think, well, this is the middle of the novel, so they're blatantly going to survive this.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's easy to get complacent that way. So sometimes if a writer kills off a very key character, maybe not the main protagonist, but their sidekick, it makes you sit up.
Swedish crime series are really good.
Yes. And it makes you think, well, I can't take anything for granted now, actually. And, yeah, it catches your attention.
Definitely. You can kill people off quite successfully. Just make sure you don't kill them all.
No, you want you don't want your final 10,000 words to have to be just describing what the world looks like post-flu epidemic that killed the world or something. You need some survivors.
A small dog picks at the ruins for 10,000 worms. You know, I know you said just write anything, but, you know, keep it reasonable. So, which brings us, now you've killed everyone and there's a small dog picking at the ruins of your novel, to tying up loose ends in week four.
This week, you need to finish. All your energy has to be on meeting that goal, submitting your word count before midnight on the 30th, and winning this challenge. You have come far too far by this stage to flop and give up, so give it your all. It's only one more week.
True.
And then you'll have achieved something massive.
True. 7 days isn't a long time. Even if you're knackered, even if you're so exhausted,
Yeah. It's
only 7 days. It will go in a flash. If you think about spending a week on an amazing holiday, it's gone in an instant. And 7 days out of 365 in a year, and say 70 years of your life, it's not a long time. So push through.
And even just the average working week, I know in previous jobs I've had, you know, you can be on the bus on a drizzly Monday morning, and it feels like 5 minutes since you were on the same bus on the last drizzly Monday morning.
Cool.
Weeks pass by in an instant, so make this one a really worthwhile one. The other thing at this stage is to not let performance anxiety hit you. There are people, people with certain personality traits will get to 45,000 words and go, oh my God, if I write this, it means I've written a novel and that's massive and I don't know if I can do it, and panic then and get so close to and then not finish. I used to know a woman who did 90% of her PhD in about 18 months and then spent about a year and a half on her final chapter. Because she couldn't finish. The thought of finishing made her panic so much. So don't let that kind of performance anxiety hit you at this stage. What you're going to have at the end of the month is not a novel ready to publish. So there's no need to panic about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a novel ready to start working on, to start building up and improving. So don't expect greatness at this stage. Just keep the story coming.
It's true. You don't have to have a novel that's almost ready, and you don't need to work on it as soon as NaNoWriMo is over.
No, you probably won't want to look at it for a while.
You can leave it in a drawer for a year, it's not a problem. You know, I don't know any fiction writers who will write one thing and never write anything before and never write anything since.
Yeah.
And even if you find yourself just mining this manuscript in the year to come, going, not really feeling this as a novel, but I love this chapter, and actually, that supporting character, I'd love to learn more about them.
Yeah.
But it's just a massive achievement to have written so much and to have pushed through writer's block and to prove to yourself that you really can get that bulk down on paper. So rather than thinking, there's so much wrong with this, think that you've really achieved something amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's incredible. That's a lot of words.
It is.
So if, or really I should say when, you complete this epic mammoth task, don't forget to submit your word count so that you're officially a NaNoWriMo winner.
Oh, yes, definitely.
You can do this at any stage from, I think, the 25th onwards if you hit your count early, somehow. But you must get it done before midnight strikes on the 30th. At that stage, celebrate. Boast a lot. And then when you're ready, if you're ever ready, start the hard work of now turning all of that into something that could just be presentable and publishable in time.
Definitely. And hopefully these tips will just help to take you from thinking about NaNoWriMo to maybe creeping up close to it and going, I'll have a closer look at that, to just taking one week at a time. I think that's what we'd really like to say as well. You know, I think I speak for both of us when I say don't build it up into something huge.
Mm-hmm.
Don't panic. Eating an elephant, you just take it one bite at a time. You really
absolutely.
Just, this is it. If it works for you to think about 1,667 words a day, do that. If it works to think about sort of 13,000 words a week, do that. if it helps you to think about, I'll just do a chapter here, I'll just do a scene there, do that. It's all okay. And if you find that at the end of the month you don't have 50,000 words, don't flop around like a fish on a board going, oh, I'm such a failure. Because everything you will do and everything you'll learn will be such a benefit to you. And if you've written 10,000 words, that's 10,000 words you wouldn't have written. If you've written 20,000 words, that's amazing. Don't beat yourself up. Enjoy it.
Definitely. Take the thing, like Laurie says, take the things you learn from the experience. Whether that's actually, say you normally suffer from incredibly bad writer's block and you just panic and can't write anything. If you do a week of NaNoWriMo and by the end of that week you can sit down and just start writing, that's a massive achievement. If you normally agonize over every word and that stops you from writing, use this as a way to practice allowing yourself to write something that isn't necessarily great but can be fixed.
This is it. Fiction writing is often like pouring cold syrup from a bottle. There's a cork to get rid of, and then you've got to get warmed up because otherwise it will just ooze out really, really, really slowly. And if you don't keep tilting that bottle, it will just stop. You just have to keep tilting and tilting and tilting and writing and writing and writing. And the words will flow if you keep practicing. You'll hit wall after wall after wall, and that's normal. And I think that's permanent. But something like this and the creativity boosters that we've mentioned, that will help you climb over the wall and get back into the swing of things.
Definitely. So let us know, are you doing NaNoWriMo this year? Tell us if you are, because we would love to see how you progress, because obviously if you do it, we want you to win.
Definitely, we'll cheer you on.
We will, every step of the way. And so do let us know how you're getting on throughout the month, because we will absolutely cheer you on all the way. And it might be that you find that you've listened to this podcast and then in week one you might want to listen again to the week one section, and in week two you might want to listen again to what we said about week two and so on, because it's all very well listening to it in advance and thinking, oh, that's a good idea. Mm. But when you're in the midst of it, it can be a bit harder to remember sometimes.
Of course it can. And remember that at littlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com you'll find all the links to our episodes, and you'll also find some transcripts there. If you don't have time to sit and listen to us chatter on again, do have a nosy for the transcript, because it's all written down for you. You can have a nosy, you can copy and paste it into a Word document somewhere, and just look at the tips that we give you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so if you're doing NaNoWriMo, good luck. And if you're not, have a think about how some of the advice we've given today could apply to your own fiction, non-fiction, commercial writing, any of it, because there are lessons in there for all writers, I think.
Definitely. You know, everybody could do with a little bit more of an exercise in just getting words down on paper.
Yeah.
So let us know if you've got any good tips for NaNoWriMo novelists. Before, come and have a chat to us on our Facebook page. If you search for Freelance Writing Podcast, you'll find us on there.
And if you do it, and if you win, if you complete your 50,000 words, let us know and we will give a name check in our first episode in December. We will give a shout out to any of our listeners that completed it, so do get in touch.
Now, what could be better?
Well, quite.
Well, I'll tell you what, our recommendations.
Oh my goodness me.
Now it's time for our lovely Little Bird recommendations of the week, in which Pip and I share something that we found this week that we think is useful, interesting, witty, or just worth a nod, really.
Mm-hmm.
Philippa?
My recommendation this week relates to some of the things we've talked about a lot about how to behave on social media. And also how to not mess up when you're on social media, but how to manage it if you do. It's a blog post about a really unfortunate Twitter fail.
Oh, I love these. Honestly, listeners, I love it when she finds Twitter fails, because I haven't heard of them.
This one is particularly egregious. A journalist
Okay.
in America when tweeting about a real life shooting, compared it to Breaking Bad.
No.
The TV program. Her tweet read, "Thought Breaking Bad was hot last Sunday. See who's Breaking Bad in Southwest Philly, leaving 6 people shot tonight at 10. So it's like a proper trailer for a drama, but this is 6 actual people who were actually shot.
I've just clicked on it. 5,504 retweets, and I imagine that was only at the time. 1,914 favourites. So I'd say that's a fair bit of attention for that little boo-boo.
Indeed, and it's, you know, she was obviously trying to go with something topical because Breaking Bad is what everybody's been talking about. But when you've got real-life people being shot, to present it in such a dramatic, you know, way is inappropriate and a massive misjudgment. And so, of course, people started pouncing.
Yeah.
And what made her situation worse was how she then handled it.
Oh, no.
She didn't say, oh, you know, I made a mistake. That was an insensitive thing to do. She defended herself to a fault, really. So this post also goes into what to do when you do make a massive boo-boo. And their rule number one is admit that you're wrong, which she refused to do. She justified it saying, last tweet, not at all a joke. Very real-life drama was the point, as opposed to one that ended on TV. And that's not a justification, and it just, you know, it doesn't work at all.
It's pitiful.
Rule number...
dreadful. Sorry, yeah. Really sharp.
I know. It's appalling. I will mention the fact that she seems to work for Fox News with no further comment on that. Rule number two, and this might sound tongue-in-cheek, but there's some truth in it. Use proper grammar.
Mm-hmm.
She says, Mother Teresa could tweet with the wrong form of their or your, and trolls would still be merciless. And it's true. I saw a cartoon, I think I might have been on Pinterest, earlier in the week, that someone was saying, I've got this many Facebook followers and I've got this many Twitter followers, but none of them are engaging. And so the site says, oh, just put an apostrophe where there isn't supposed to be. And it's true. If you want people to engage, get your apostrophes wrong, because that's when 8,000 people will land and tell you. So while it's slightly tongue-in-cheek to say that using proper grammar is an important part of dealing with a Twitter fail, there's some truth in the fact that you need to think through what you're saying, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And her rule number three was, you can't pick off the haters one by one. This woman was replying to individuals, and it just didn't work, really. It wasn't what she needed to be doing, considering, you know, the situation she'd found herself in. And so it was a massive misjudgment that she made, but it was exacerbated, really, by her then not handling the fact that she was a sudden viral hit in a negative way.
Yeah.
She also didn't know how to handle that. And so, yeah, Twitter fails can be hilarious. This one is more than funny.
Jaw-dropping.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see it so often, don't you?
Yeah.
And the thing with Twitter fails is they do follow a pattern. There are very set rules. If you find yourself making a massive boo-boo on Twitter, it's all well and good saying, well, you shouldn't have done it, you shouldn't have said it.
Mm.
It's a bit late when you've made one and people are flaming you left, right and centre. There are very, very set rules, and I think that blog post really illustrates that. And
yeah.
I trust us, listeners, we've seen it time and time and time again. Don't break the Twitter flaming rules.
Yeah.
And you'll come out of it a lot more easily than if you try to defend yourself, if you tell people that they're all wrong and they just don't understand.
There was a situation I found myself in a little while ago where I manage the Twitter feed for a feminist website that I write for, and we've got like over 20,000 followers, so it's quite a big deal. And if you make a mistake, people are quick to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And I linked to a post that was very interesting, but I hadn't noticed that at the bottom of the page in the sidebar, there were some ads for porn sites. And I should have spotted it. In which case I could have put a note in the tweet just saying, you know, not safe for work or something like that. But I hadn't scrolled all the way down the page, so I hadn't spotted this. And so I posted it, and then a few people got back to me, and thankfully were very nice about it, and just said, I don't know if you saw, but they were porn sites. And so I immediately sent another tweet out saying, big apologies, I should have written not safe for work on that tweet. I missed it. I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
And what was interesting was that all the responses I got from there were people saying, it's so nice to hear a proper apology.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't saying, I'm sorry if it offended you, but it was a mistake and it wasn't my fault. Because we see that and it's never satisfying. It's never enough.
No.
The fact was, I had inadvertently done something that could have caused distress to people or could have got them in trouble at work.
Yeah.
And so I apologised because that was the right thing to do. And the fact that everybody commented on how notable it was to have someone just say, I am sorry, I made a mistake.
Yeah, I think I remember this at the time. And so surprised by it.
Yeah, and people were, like, it kind of, I ended up looking really good, which I hadn't intended to at all, because everybody was linking to it going, this is what an apology looks like. This is how apologies should be done. Why does nobody do apologies like this anymore? Whereas, in fact, it was the obvious thing to do, and it immediately diffused a potentially difficult situation. That's how to do it. If I'd gone to each individual person and said, well, it's not that bad, you know.
Yeah, you didn't have to scroll down to the bottom. I bet your boss didn't even see it. I don't see what the problem is.
Exactly.
I mean, they might all be relevant points. You might, you know, I know that you wouldn't, but one might actually think those things.
Mm.
For the sake of branding yourself on social media, it's not about you. It's about your business. And I've seen sole traders explode their businesses by being rude to customers. I remember one particular guy, he was a roofer, and he had been rude to a woman who was a client of his. He'd been rude to her. I think he'd made some sexist remark about, go and make me a cup of tea, you know, or he'd wolf whistled or something. There was something sexist in it.
Yeah.
And when he was challenged on that, I think she gave him a negative review.
Yep.
He started getting really abusive, using really misogynist language, really sexually graphic language. And as people started flooding his Facebook page, just calling him a loser, giving him bad reviews, he carried on. Actually, he had to remove his Facebook page. His Twitter feed went down. And you know how long it takes to build up these things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Particularly, you know, on Facebook, I suppose Facebook's not bad for B2C, as you are if you're a roofer.
Yeah.
But some platforms are harder than others to build up, and that's a lot of time wasted, rather than just saying, you're completely right, I fully apologise, won't happen again.
Because we all do make mistakes, and sometimes, if you're pulled up on it, you just have to say, that was a mistake, I misjudged, I don't know what I was thinking, you know, I did it, and I'm sorry, because I know I shouldn't have done. Everybody comes out of that happier.
Memories are short if you apologise properly.
Yeah. Yeah,
they actually
absolutely are.
Things will die down extremely quickly if you apologise properly. But if you throw another bee into that nest, it's not going to end well. So have a look at that blog post and learn from it.
Learn from Joyce Evans.
Old Joyce.
Joyce Evans, Fox 29.
Good old Joyce.
But yeah, as always, there will be links to our recommendations in the show notes at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com.
Well, my recommendation this week, I was a bit nervous about it, really. I don't know why. I don't know why I get this anxiety about recommendations, but it's just a bit boring. But, in its defence,
very useful.
It's extremely useful. Now, Pip's seen it because I sort of said to her, Pip, is this too boring? And she said, no, it's completely fine. So, listeners, if you're bored, it's Pip's fault. Now, my recommendation this week is a net profit margin, otherwise known as return on sales ratio calculator. Ta-da! Yeah. Exciting.
I'm not yawning at all.
Not at all. But what this will do is it will show you the after-tax profit generated by every sales dollar, or in our case, every sales pound, by measuring the percentage of sales review retained by your company after operating expenses, creditor interest expenses, and income taxes have been paid.
Stay now, with us, listeners. Stay with us.
Stay listeners. Stay put. In short, what it means is it will work out what you're earning after all the bits and bobs have been taken out by the tax man and whoever you need to pay what.
And that's the important bit.
This is the important bit, the money that you get. Now, the reason I've brought this up now is because we're all starting to think about taxes, or we all should start to think about taxes soon. Once NaNoWriMo's out of the way, there's no breathing space, it's time to think about filing your tax returns, at least here in the UK. Now, to do that, you've got to have all your figures and all your receipts and everything sorted, and with such a lot of work involved, you might as well get the best out of it. Now, you might remember, if you're a long-term listener, that at the start of this year, Pip and I recorded an episode, it was the first episode of 2013, on how to set your annual goals.
And
we did indeed. And this was shortly followed by how to set your fees. Now, I'm coming round and I'll tie it all together. When you find out what your net profit margin is, what you're making, you're effectively finding out what your net salary is.
Yeah.
So the start of next year is the perfect time to readjust your rates. If you find that at the end of a year, the fee that you thought was okay is actually only bringing you, say, £11,000 a year after expenses have gone out. You know, you might be wondering why the purse strings are feeling very tight. It may be that you need to up your rates, or it may be that you're doing very well.
Yeah.
But it's really good to know, and it's good to have a handle on your net profits, not your gross profits, which is everything that you've got, everything that comes in, so your total salary for the year.
Mm-hmm.
But your net profits, that's everything that you get and keep.
Yes, definitely.
So this calculator, it's just two fields. It's super, super simple. You pop in your net income after taxes, and then you add in your net sales, and you calculate. And that will work out your net profit margin for you. And then you can go into 2014 knowing what you need to do, whether you need to get some more clients on, whether you need to up the fees for, you know, some clients that you thought, oh, it's okay that they're on a low rate, but might not actually be that okay. It's just going to help you get a better handle on your finances. And although that can be really intimidating, if you spot a tool like this that will make it just slightly less terrifying, it's always worth a nod.
Yeah, I think it's fairly true to say that a lot of creative type freelancers aren't always that well informed about the financial side of things.
And we can be ostrichy, can't we? We'll just stick our head in the sand. Oh, definitely.
Think, I don't understand this. I'm not going to do anything. But if there's something like this that will help you to envisage what you're earning and how and what you need to be doing, then anything that helps, frankly, can only be a good thing.
This is it, because although, I mean, I hate finances. I hate looking at my finances. I hate taxes with a passion. But this is not a game, and this is part of being a freelancer. This is your career. This is your business. You are the person running this business, and as such, you really do have to take the rough with the smooth. You have to have a look at your finances. It's not a question of just going, oh, I think I'm all right, I think I'm okay. Because a little tweak here and there to your fees, you know, upping your rates by, say, £3 for somebody, upping your rates for someone else by, say, £50 for a big project, that can make a huge difference. That can make a really, really big difference. And if you start thinking of your finances less like a big scary monster and more just like a balance that you have to keep relatively level,
mm-hmm.
then you'll do absolutely fine. So familiarise yourself with things like this. This is on a website for freelancers. It's called BDC Entrepreneurs First. They have a number of ratio calculators on there. I don't think the others are quite as useful or quite as simple to understand. You know, you've got debt to asset ratios and debt to equity ratios and working capital ratios. It's not really anything that you're going to want to look at, really. But the net profit margin is something that applies to you as a freelancer. So go and have a nosy. There'll be a link in the show notes, and that's at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com.
We really hope that this week's episode has been useful to you. If you're doing NaNoWriMo, then the best of luck from both of us. And if you're not, see what you can take from it anyway, and just maybe try a few new things with your writing.
And that very firmly wraps up episode 58 of A Little Bird Told Me.
Goodness me.
So, if in the meantime, you have a few weeks before NaNoWriMo starts, if you want any advice, if you have any questions, if you have got any ideas of your own that you'd like to share with us, we're happy to give shout-outs. So come and have a look for us on Facebook. You can search for A Little Bird Told Me Writing Podcast, or you can just search for Freelance Writing Podcast, and we're pretty easy to find. Or just go and have a look at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, and you can link through from there. And we are happy to advise, we're happy to chat, and we're happy to share any ideas that you have. In the meantime, I've been Laurie Hartshorn.
And I have been Philippa Willits. And we will see you next time.